It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
It's the 83rd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have the concluding portion of my interview with Deathmatch's Paul Jenkins. He dishes more on the series and talks a lot about comics today, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy listening to him. If you haven't listened to the first portion in last week's episode, be sure to go back and listen to it. He did say a lot of interesting things at that time. Then everything wraps up with Gianluca Glaser and I talking about the latest news and previews. Since I'm anxious for you to hear what Paul has to say, let's get back to his interview. Sounds to me like you're having a ball with this book, compared to characters that, like, say, Spider-Man or Batman, which you've written, other people. Is it more fun to do kind of your own characters and do these kind of things that don't have to come back from month to month?
Yeah, I think that the monthly thing hit me at some point. You know, I used to do the monthly thing. I used to love it. I never ran short of ideas. But I think that, you know, my time doing monthly books, it was a lot different than it is now. Mm-hmm. Back in the time when I did monthly books, I was given absolute carte blanche to do what I wanted to do. That kind of creative freedom was a result of Marvel's bankruptcy. And they had no ability to decide what they wanted to do. They just kind of handed it lock, stock, and barrel to the creators and said, please help. Mm-hmm. And so we did, and they gave us that empowerment, and it felt great. You know, it was awesome. Mark Buckingham and I used to just think of great ideas, and one of the funny things that we used to do with Spider-Man, we did it from the very beginning. When we took over Spider-Man, and I think you have to just look back in the history of the character, I think it was probably 1999 or 2000, sometime like that. Mm-hmm. Marvel in bankruptcy, everything falling apart. A kind of institutionalized creative bankruptcy pervaded the company. I think they were struggling to work out what to do next. And they had handed, for example, the reins to John Byrne to recreate Spider-Man and recreate Hulk. And I think, and I can't remember what John's series was, but I think it was the precursor to the Ultimate line. They wanted to recreate it for a different audience, but they'd handed it to John and said, go ahead. And John had basically recreated the origins, and it looked as if it was like the real origin of Spider-Man by John Byrne. And so, of course, there was another backlash to the fans. You know, you didn't create that. Stan Lee created it. It was Steve. You know, everybody's sort of getting upset. And really, there was nothing going on. Now, in the main books, there was very little. Mary Jane, if people recall from that time ago, had actually just died in a plane crash. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we knew she was coming back. And it actually became part of my college lecture, Wayne, where I would say to people, you know, back in the days when comics were very dynamic, if Spider-Man was traveling the rooftops holding a blueberry pie, hoping to get home in time for Aunt May, mm-hmm. he ran into Dr. Octopus or the Green Goblin, you'd think, wow, I hope he doesn't drop that pie. Because if he does, it's going to be all hell to pay with Aunt May. She might find out he's a teenage Spider-Man. So on and so forth. You know, we cared about the fate of the blueberry pie. Mm-hmm. Time, you know, all these years had wound around. Mary Jane is now dead in a plane crash. And, you know, the resounding meh that emanated from the fans because we knew she's coming back. Mm-hmm. So what we did was say, well, what's good here? You know, we wrote single issue stories about Spider-Man being funny. We actually did comedy pieces. Why not? Mm-hmm. That's what he used to do. It was great. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the thing that we had. You know, we had creative freedom, and it really rebuilt the company. But at a certain point, that turns around, and suddenly there's an editorial requirement. Hey, I need you to write this. Hey, I think this should be in it. Oh, we should cross over here. Hey, here's an event. And that's just not me. I'm just not that guy. So now I'm back to Deathmatch, and it's my stuff. And I am that guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great because you get to be creative. You get to do things that other people can't do, as you've mentioned. And I think that makes the book a very interesting read. I really do. I have no idea what's going to happen next, and I like that. I truly do.
Yeah. It, certainly, I think the thing that the fans will appreciate if they're following the book will be you can get comfortable with a character if you want to, but don't breathe out because that's mm-hmm. around for long. And you'll feel a sense of loss, I think, if you lose a character that you like.
See, that's the great thing, though. It's because already I've gotten somewhat attached to Dragonfly, you know, Benny. And, you know, should something happen to him, really on any level, it'll be interesting to see my reaction to that. Because I do think that he's got a lot of growing to do, and he's got a lot of interesting things going on and interactions with people. Of course, the whole business about him killing somebody. Now, that brings me to one point I wanted to ask about, was that it seems like some of their morality seems to get removed when they go into the arena, mm-hmm. as it were. Are we going to discover how that comes to be at some point?
Yeah, at the moment, it's like really the big mystery of the story. Mm-hmm. You're right, that we started the story in the middle, mm-hmm. and we find these characters battling. They then tell us, We don't remember how we got here. Mm-hmm. We don't know why we're here. We don't know who's doing this to us. Mm-hmm. No one has had the courtesy to tell us what we're doing. It looks like we're fighting for somebody's amusement. But there's such a mystery as to why any of this is happening. And yet when they are taken inside the arena, they will fight. Mm-hmm. Now they're being either brainwashed going into the arena, mm-hmm. or what seems to be happening is that they're now being told why they are really there. And the moment that they are told why they are really there and why they must battle, that seems to be persuading even, you know, two characters, Nephilim and Electronica, who had always loved each other. Mm-hmm. Or in the next issue, Sol Invictus and a character called Replicate are both put into the arena to fight each other. And they have been brothers in arms and they've loved each other. And yet when they get into the arena, that goes away. So there must be tremendous reason why. And it seems to be tied into this big event that's called the Rift.
It just feels like you're trying to stretch and see how far these heroes can be pulled, you know, when they have to go in there and do these things, fight people that they very much have strong feelings for.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, if I said to you, it is the hero's kind of plight. We look at Spider-Man and we say, hey, Spider-Man, I'm going to do something to you. I'm going to throw a child off a cliff over there, and my cohort is going to throw a child off a cliff on the other side. Which one are you going to save? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's Spider-Man. Wow, what do I do? Spider-Man does everything to try to save both. Batman saves one of them that's the most useful. You know, who knows? Like, these characters are like, well, what if you're put in a position where there's some important reason why you must fight to the absolute death with someone, even if moments before you've loved them, there must be some good reason. When you do that, what happens to somebody's morality?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that fascinates me. The fact that we don't know everything that's going on, I really like, and I want to know, so I'm going to keep reading and keep buying it, because I'm dying to know what's going on here. I just think it's a wonderful thing, and I love new heroes and new villains, because we've seen several of the people, you know, in you know, DC and Marvel, you know, once you've created them, you can't really make any changes to them because you've got to do, just like I said before, bring them back. But your characters are all on the precipice. I mean, we just don't know. And as such, you know, yeah, I'm kind of worried that some of the people that I really have come to like are not going to be around much longer. But that's good because that adds tension. That adds interest. That makes me want to buy the next book and see what happens next. So I really like the way that you guys have put this together.
Thank you. And I think, you know, a couple of things that are worth saying. Number one, we have had a good response to the book. You know, people like it. Believe it's the best-selling book that Boom have done as an original series so far. And we've had nothing but positive reviews. That's interesting to me. You know, usually any book, you know, some good, some bad, sometimes more good than bad, on occasion more bad than good sometimes, you know. And but nothing but positive reviews about this book. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably because of a couple of the things that you mentioned. Number one, the rule is our rules. If someone's going to die, they're going to die. There's no saving them. They're not coming back. And they won't. They will not come back. That's it. But as easily as we have created, we will move on because there is other stuff that we have planned. First of all, are there any prequels in the works? We could possibly, you know, talk about old stories involving these characters. Mm-hmm. But secondly, a sequel. And we have talked about that. And, you know, we're going to have to get through Deathmatch and find out what it all means and what's really happening. But I will tell you a couple of things that hopefully will whet your appetite.
Okay.
What you think is happening is not what's happening.
Okay.
And when the readers find out what really is happening and who's behind this, they'll be quite interested.
Mm.
And then when they find out the truth of who's behind it, they'll flip out.
Mm. Mm, cool. Oh, man. Now I got to keep reading just to find out what the heck's going on here. This sounds like a lot of fun. Because too many things are just point blank. You know, get hit across the face with something. I would much rather solve a mystery and try to figure out what's going on, because I'm a mystery lover myself. Mm-hmm. I like the notion that I don't necessarily know what's going on. Because, you know, reading it, and by the way, I love Carlos Magno's art, mm-hmm. if I'm pronouncing his name right. Is his last name pronounced Magno or Magno?
Magno.
Magno, okay. So he is doing a wonderful job on the art. I think it's just a glorious way that he's drawing it. It's just perfectly complementing your story, I think.
Yeah, I think he's doing an amazing job. And, you know, the last thing I was going to say was, after all of that is said and done, when you find out the real reason for the death matches, mm-hmm. the real reason, that's when I think we'll have people. That's when people will say, well, wait a second. This is much bigger and more complex than I thought it was going to be when I picked up Deathmatch. And one of my favorite responses so far from any fan has been the fan that wrote in that said, I took a flyer on this first issue of Deathmatch, and it went from can't hurt to can't miss.
Well, I can kind of relate to that, because, you know, the great thing that Boom did with the first book was to sell it for a dollar. And they do that oftentimes when they have a good book that they think just needs to get out there and maybe people can access it, they'll sell it for a dollar. And I think it's gone really well. I mean, you know, when a book is real well, I went to my local store and there was a whole bunch of them in the local store. And then the next week I went back, there was none of them.
Right.
And I said, okay, I said, some people like this book.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's really now a question. It's not going to be the readers, it's going to be the retailers, I hope. Will we be able to get the retailers to understand that if you've managed to create an audience, that as retailers, you must get behind it too? I remember when The Origin of Wolverine came out, you know, people seemed happy because it sold out on basically across the country. It sold out on the first day of sales. Mm-hmm. And I was very disappointed by that. I thought that was a real shame, because we should have had enough for it to sell out over the course of the next 2 months.
Well, I saw somewhere that the first issue of Deathmatch had sold out.
Yeah, it sold out and they went to reprint. I don't believe they really went to, you know, but I mean, I thought, what a lost opportunity with Wolverine Origin. Mm-hmm. Not so much here. I mean, not a lost opportunity, because I think the book's done well. It's the little book that could.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've gone back, they've reprinted it, there's a bunch more available. So, you know, people have an opportunity for Deathmatch. They have an opportunity to read it. They have an opportunity to get access to it. And I'm just hopeful that the retailers will see that it's been very positive. And in a sense, look at the reviews. You know, the reviews are great. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen a bad one yet. Mm-hmm. Then make that product, I hope, available to your fans. And I think for fans, retailers, those of us who love this medium, what's exciting about Deathmatch is that we are doing things that really, it's almost impossible for Marvel and DC to do with their character base. With all due respect to them, I just don't think it's possible for them to do what we're doing here.
Well, variety is the spice of life, as the saying goes, and I like reading books that don't tell the same stories over and over. So what you're doing is very unique as far as comics go, and I think that's something that we need more and more of as we go forward.
Yeah, I hope so, and I'm going to be doing more stuff with Boom. Here's the thing that might be, again, intriguing is this is a world, you know? This is building a world of superheroes and villains and, sure, killing them. But when people find out what's happening, when they find out the truth behind the death matches and what has happened and what's about to happen, mm-hmm. how it ties into this massive thing that happened at this place called the Rift and what really happened there and how it pertains to the future, and then they realize that we're going to go back into the world at some point, we hope, and most of the heroes and villains are gone. Certainly most of the heroes are gone, and there's going to be a massive power vacuum for those that remain. Now what's going to happen? The whole world's going to go upside down.
Oh, cool. See, that intrigues me. I want to know. I love not knowing, and I love being teased about something that is going to be a big surprise, because I read so many stories. I mean, I have been reading for decades, and I have to be honest with you. I have read so many times the same story over and over and over and over and over. To hear something that's new and different is, to me, exciting, because I just think that there's nothing better than reading something I have not read, and that makes Deathmatch really exciting to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope that, you know, it's something that sustains, really. I really do. I hope that people are very much into it, and, you know, that we can basically continue to build on the readership and build on the sales. And if we can, then it'll be around for a long time. You know, that's the point, is I hope the readers of comics want something long term.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I do. I want to have a good book that I can read for years to come and be surprised every time I pick it up. Mm-hmm. It's nothing better. Now, you mentioned that you're working on some other stuff for Boom, and I know you've written Batman, and I'm a big old Batman fan. I just want to tell you, I enjoyed your Batman stories. I really enjoyed them. When you got to work with David Finch recently, that was fun.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping you would take over the writing on that book. And nothing against Greg Hurwitz, and I enjoy what he's doing. But I was kind of hoping you would pick that up. But, yeah, I guess you've got other irons in the fire. Are there other projects that you could tell us about that you're working on?
You know, I wish I could tell you about them. That's always okay. The thing of the comic book publishers. They want to keep their cards close to their chest. I think that they're missing opportunities when other people just kind of jump in and take their ideas. The one idea I can talk about to some extent is I am talking with Boom about really building out this world and creating what we've sort of collectively called at the moment, you know, like the Jenkins universe, you know, the Jenkins universe. We miss Astro City, you know, great book. Haven't seen it enough in a while. Haven't seen a world where they really are real and, you know, they have their way of being and they have their way of doing stuff. And we haven't had that for some time. We miss Watchmen because that was a world that was really rebuilt. And I love building worlds. And so I think that's really where I'm going a little bit. I'm going to kind of tie my lot in with the guys at Boom creatively, because they've afforded me the opportunity to express myself creatively, and that's the kind of thing that brings a great book like Deathmatch to life, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wish you a lot of success, and I hope Deathmatch continues on and just really, you know, sets the comic book stores on fire, in that, as it were, because we need this kind of stuff in the comics industry, I think.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I really hope that this works out to a big success, and we get to see more in the universe, because it's a very interesting little universe. We just put our toe in the water, and I'm already fascinated to learn more about it.
Well, you know, I'm excited to be doing it. It's coming out to be a great book. I think the fans are digging it. Let's hope it has some sustainability. You know, we should really want for this kind of thing to build through the comic book world. So let's hope that we can keep it going.
Well, I'm going to promote it and preview it as much as I can, because I think it's a great book. So, Paul, good talking with you, and hopefully we get a chance to talk with you again sometime in the future when we get some other irons in the fire we can talk about.
Sure, absolutely. It's a pleasure talking to you, Wayne.
It's time for this week's news and previews. And with me, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing today, Gianluca?
I'm doing very well, Wayne. How about yourself?
Good, good. I've got a lot of news, and I'm sure you do too. So why don't we go ahead and get started? What should we know about?
Okay, let's start with a couple of news items before we get down to the nitty-gritty on January. Ant-Man director Edgar Wright continues to maintain that his epic will not be your garden variety Marvel comic superhero movie. Mm-hmm. This Ant-Man film, which is part of the Marvel Phase 3, you know, I mentioned that to you before about the Phase 2 movies and then the Phase 3. Mm-hmm. This movie, according to Wright, will be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but will feel like its own piece. Mm-hmm. Rice will have a little over 2.5 years to realize his vision of the Ant-Man film, which is slated to debut November 5th, 2015. So, it probably means there's not going to be any, like, surprise cameos or guests from the other Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. Like, don't expect Tony Stark to show up, you know, at some point in time in the movie.
Okay.
Interesting cast news here. Sin City 2 is shaping up to be really cool looking. They added Stacy Keach to the cast. Stacy Keach has been around for a long time. I loved him as Titus's dad on that Fox television series.
Mm-hmm.
He was also on the first season of Prison Break. He was a warden in that, and he's done several movies. Usually plays the heavy, you know. Mystery X, he was great in that film as well, too. So, glad to have him on board. The first Sin City had a great cast, too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, before Mickey Rourke kind of had his wrestler comeback, he was given a great role in that film. You had Powers Booth. You had Rutger Hauer in it as well, too. So, yeah, looking forward to Sin City, too.
Great.
So, here's a piece of news you're dying to talk about. January sales are out. Comic books and graphic novels. This is the direct market sales, so this is for all the comic book retailers. And January is a really good month for comic books and graphic novels. Comic book sales were up 22% compared to last January's. And graphic novels were up a whopping 37.89% also compared to 2002.
So, wow. I mean, 2012.
Comic book sales were slightly down from December, like 4 or 5%, depending on whether you're talking about units or dollars. And then graphic novels, though, were up big time from December, which is kind of surprising because you'd think, you know, more sales of graphic novels would have happened as Christmas gifts and stuff like that, and then you'd think they kind of, like, slow down in January, but quite the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, the only thing that I was thinking was that maybe what happens is people give out gift cards and people are redeeming them in January.
That's a good point, too. You know, Amazon cards or Blockbuster or maybe just gift cards for retail shops. Hard to say. So in terms of market share, Marvel has a big lead over DC in January. As far as dollars, Marvel was 34.82% to DC's 31.61%. And in terms of units sold, Marvel was up 40.23% to DC's 35.41%. So that Marvel Now event, you know, is really helping Marvel and kind of spreading that gap that they have over DC. It's kind of like before the New 52. You know, Marvel had this kind of lead, then DC kind of caught up and overtook Marvel for a couple of months and, you know, kind of held its own, and then that Zero Issue event also took DC ahead of Marvel. Now it seems like Marvel is still ahead. Even though overall sales for DC are up, Marvel's is just that much higher.
So you would say that Marvel did the smarter thing rather than what DC did. DC put them all out at one time. Marvel's been spreading them out over several months, so you think that was a better way to
go? Yeah, you know, that was my thing at the time, too. We talked about this, and if anybody wants to go back and track your old episodes from, like, 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, yeah, I kind of railed against that whole doing it all in 1 month kind of thing. It made a lot of money, but long-term, you know, it's Marvel was able to catch up and have their own events and keep spreading, you know, getting the lead back, and this kind of spreads things out. It's consistent, and then, you know, later on this news, we'll talk about some other Marvel events that are going to, like, help them as well, too.
Okay.
So, yeah. In terms of, like, the top sales publications, over in the comic book side, Superior Spider-Man was number one. Batman number 16 was number 2, followed by Justice League 16. Then we get into Marvel territory here, with number 4 being New Avengers number 1, Superior Spider-Man number 2, because now they do these twice-a-month issues.
Mm-hmm.
Savage Wolverine number 1, Uncanny Avengers number 3, DC comes back at number 8 with Detective Comics number 16, and then rounding out the last two, 9 and 10, we have Marvel with Avengers number 3 and Uncanny X-Force number 1.
Now, the one that interests me the most of that is Detective being in the top 10, which fascinates me. Now, Superior Spider-Man, I think the collectability is going to run out, and we're going to see those numbers sag as time goes along. and all these new Avengers. So you got number ones. You got New Avengers number one. You got Superior Spider-Man number one. You've got Savage Wolverine number one. Uncanny X-Force number one. I think next month is going to be a different story because of that. Number ones are highly collectible, especially if they're Marvels.
So retailers order a lot of these. And these are retailer sales. These aren't like what the public bought. A lot of these may be in the dollar bin, you know, in a month's time. But this is based off of what Diamond sells to the retailers.
Are you hearing any reaction to Superior Spider-Man? Do you think that it's how it's doing as far as likability and collectability and buyability?
I haven't heard anything in regards to it being collectible. Some people enjoy the story. Some people are taking a wait-and-see approach. And some people are kind of already sick of the storyline and just want their Peter Parker back as Spider-Man.
Well, we all know what's going to happen.
Yeah, eventually. it may take a year's time, but who knows how long they're going to drag that out for. And looking at graphic novel sales in January, here's a list of the top 10. Number one was Fables Volume 18 from Vertigo. Then we have, for number two, we have an Image book that isn't a Walking Dead book. We have Saga Volume 1. Then we get our Walking Dead Volume 1. So,
brother,
there it is there. Then number four is Silver Surfer by Stan Lee and Mobius. Walking Dead again, Volume 2. Justice League Volume 2, the Villainous Journey hardcover book. Justice League Volume 1, Origin Street paperback. Then we get a couple more Walking Deads. Volume 3 is number 8. And number 9 is The Walking Dead Volume number 17. And then number 10, we get Animal Man, Volume 2, Animal versus Man. So that's the start of Steve Pugh doing the artwork on the New 52.
Yeah, good stuff. It's interesting to me. Walking Dead's always going to be like half of the top 10.
Oh, totally.
I was fascinated that two of them are Justice Leagues. So that's a good thing for DC.
Absolutely. And then I'm surprised, too, that Saga, Volume 1 from Image was the top Image book in the graphic novel category.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff there.
Yeah.
Speaking of Diamond news, longtime Diamond comic distributor, VP of Purchasing, Bill Shanes, has stepped down from his position effective April 30th. He's going to continue as a part-time advisor for the company through the end of 2013. He's being replaced by the executive director of purchasing, John Werzer, who has been promoted to the vice president of purchasing. Werzer has been with the company since 1990 and is in his current position. He's responsible for the day-to-day department of purchasing since 2001. So kind of an end of an era there. Mm-hmm. I'm lucky to have met Bill Shanes a few times at conventions and retail summits.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice guy. Always took the time to talk to me. He was very chummy with Dave Elliott when I worked over at Radical. So, kind of sad to see him step down. Hopefully it's a voluntary retirement type of thing,
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You've been with Diamond for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, there we go. In DC news, there's been a number of comic books titles that are going to be ending soon. Fury of Firestorm, Ravagers, a Savage Hawkman, which I mentioned to you last week, Deathstroke, Team 7, and Sword of Sorcery. All their final issues are coming out in May. Then you take into account that there's also two issues ending in April. We have iVampire DCU Presents. And it's going to be a total of 8 titles ending in the spring for the New 52.
Mm-hmm.
Probably means that a number of new titles are going to come on board.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on all this?
Well, it's kind of fascinating to me that some of the ones that they just started up are going.
Right.
Team 7, all that stuff, and the Sword of Sorcery, those are all recent developments, and they're not even going to make it to like 7 or 8 months. But, that's not uncommon. At the beginning of the New 52, it was about 7 months in, they canceled a whole bunch of titles. So I guess by now they have an idea how these books are going
to
do.
Yeah, there's a certain threshold that has to be made. If a book sells less than 20,000 copies, then it's kind of in the danger zone, some of these titles hit down as low as like 11,000 copies. So time to go at that point, right?
Yeah, I think so. Now, one of the interesting changes that's coming, too, that I know of, I saw in one of the articles, was that Michael Alan Nelson is going to be working on Supergirl.
Yeah, so he's moving from Ravagers, and he's kind of a new addition to the writers for DC. He's written lots of stuff for Boom over the years, and I was so glad to see him make it to DC. And then I hear about this book being canceled. I'm like, oh, man. But then I happily hear that, you know, he's going to be moving on to another DC title with Supergirl.
Yeah, well, Supergirl is a good character to work on. They've done a nice job of reworking her into something that's not your typical super character. So he's probably going to continue with some of that. I'm hoping to have an interview with him shortly, one of the upcoming episodes real soon. So we'll talk about where he wants to go with the character and things like that.
Yeah, I hope they move Joshua Hale Fialco onto another DC title as well, too, now that iVampire is ending.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll see. Everything will be revealed in due time.
Yeah. Now, one thing I appreciate DC is doing is taking chances. You know, Sword of Sorcery was a sorcery book, you know, sort of a fantasy kind of a setup. You know, Team 7 was characters that were not in the main, you know, flow of things. Savage Hawkman, of course, Hawkman's going to be gone into Justice League of America, so it won't be the end of him.
Right.
Other than that, it's kind of an interesting thing to see. They're going to move some of these characters. Like Amethyst supposedly is moving over, I think, into Justice League Dark or something like that. So she's all over the place, too. So it's not the end of these characters. It's like with Blue Beetle has moved on and from other place into this Threshold.
Yeah.
So there's all that's going on. So it's not the end of the character, so those of us who like him can find him other places.
Yeah, Blue Beetle's moving on, and Frankenstein's going to be in Justice League Dark, so, yeah. They'll be in some supergroup somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, because, you know, the team books give you a chance to do a character and play it out, and then after a while people kind of like it, and then they can reboot them and see what's going to be happening with a character on an individual basis.
Sure.
So, anyway.
All right. So, a couple of big Marvel things going on. You know, we talk about Marvel taking the lead. You know, I did this rant with you last week about how just, you know, these events, just, you know, people complain about them. But when it comes down to, you know, sales and numbers, they're the ones that make money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This was in regards to Age of Ultron. So, here's the thing with Age of Ultron. It takes two things that just annoy the hell out of me. costume changes and character deaths. Neither one of them stick, you know? A costume change never sticks. We've seen the Iron Man-looking Spider-Man outfit that never stuck and all this other junk. And the same goes with nobody ever staying dead. So, Marvel's latest teaser for the Age of Ultron scrapes the previous submit or perish motto and puts in the more deadly sounding do or die. Mm-hmm. And then asks the omnibus question, who will emerge from the Age of Ultron? It would appear that Brian Michael Bendis' crossover event would involve the demise of a Marvel hero or two.
Mm-hmm.
The teaser image, you know, we're already getting into who's going to die. Right, like someone's going to permanently die. Mm-hmm. We're going to kill off Iron Man, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just for press.
Right.
And same with these crossover events. It's just for sales, and, you know, whether there's a long-lasting outcome, who knows.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the other part that bothers me. So the teaser image appears to indicate that the crossover event is either probably taking place in some alternative Marvel Comics universe or something strange is happening, because basically these normal characters and their costumes are mashed up in a very strange way.
Mm.
The Wasp is wearing a new Captain Marvel costume. Cyclops is looking more like Cable. And Wolverine is back to the brown on tan costume. Star-Lord is apparently wearing a costume very similar to his original one. And the question remains, you know, do these changes reflect some sort of alternative or future Marvel universe? Mm-hmm. Are these changes the results of what happens in the first six issues of the Age of Ultron?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yes, two things that just annoy me, because to me, mm-hmm. they mean nothing. Character mm-hmm. deaths and costume changes.
Well, then, it's got to be done.
And then crossover events, which of course annoy everybody. But guess what? Marvel's on top. When these books come out, they're going to be on top. Mm-hmm. So why would they? Why would anybody stop doing them?
Yeah.
So we have that event, the Age of Ultron event, but that's not the only event that's going on in the Marvel Universe.
Mm.
Following the brief appearance at the end of 2012's The Avengers film, as well as recent news about the Thanos Rising limited series in April, we're going to see the Eternals return. In May, Marvel reunites its greatest superhero teams to combat the most dangerous threat facing the Marvel Universe in Infinity, the new crossover event, Infinity.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the Age of Ultron, and then we're going to have Infinity. It's going to be penned by Jonathan Hickman, and it's going to have art by Jim Chung. Infinity is all new story pitting the Avengers, X-Men, Guardians of the Galaxy, Fantastic Four, Inhumans, Superior Spider-Man, and a host of other Marvel heroes in an intergalactic war against evil Thanos. It's slated for a free comic book day. Infinity will launch on May 4th, 2013 as a first shot in the war and a prelude to a new Marvel event. So there we go. They just cranking them out. You know, usually, didn't these crossover events used to happen once a year?
Well, either that or like one would happen at a time rather than multiple ones.
Right.
But that's what they do now. They want events because people seem to want to buy them.
Yep. Milking it dry there.
Mm-hmm.
And then a final little Marvel piece. No crossover event here, just a collection story. But Marvel is releasing Wolverine, the Adamantium Collection. A 16-pound, 720-page slipcase hardcover collection with a cover price of $200. It traces the transformation of Wolverine, origins, all that stories and stuff. This massive volume will be published just a month before the release of Fox's The Wolverine movie, directed by James Mangold. So, there you go.
Well, gee, a slipcover, hardcover.
Yep.
Gee, I wonder what company has been doing that for the last 10, 15 years.
Right.
You know, DC's been doing that forever, this Ultimate or Ultimate line, or not Ultimate, but the Platinum or whatever they call it.
Sure.
And you get those things, and, you know, they have the great stuff like Justice League and Avengers crossover came out like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think those are great ways to have them if they're like Rocketeer was done that way.
Yeah.
You've got slipcovers are wonderful to keep them, you know, safe and clean. So I just find it funny that they're doing Wolverine that way. And it's $200. The most that a DC one usually goes is about $100.
Right.
But like those big, huge collection ones, like maybe that's what they're.
Yeah.
Maybe they're collecting those like the number ones and number zeros were $150.
Right.
So anyway.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Another comic book news: Dark Horse Comics has announced the July 24th publication of The Legend of Korra, The Art of the Animated Series, Book 1, Air. This is a lavish art book that celebrates the very popular Nickelodeon animated series, which in itself is a sequel to the equally popular Avatar The Last Airbender cartoon series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never heard of this series till like, Addicting Games had the Legend of Korra game on the iPad.
Mm.
So it's actually a really good game. Don't know about the cartoon series, but
I can't get into Avatar because Avatar has got multiple chapters, and
yeah.
You know, I can never find the first one. You know, we talk about number ones and stuff. I can never find the actual first story, so I know what's going on, how this gets started, and they'll run them in marathons. But like I said, the first one is hard to find, so.
Okay.
Can never get into it, and I got a feeling now they've had a guy with this little blue arrow on his head, and now they've got a girl,
right,
as the main character. So I guess they're trying to draw in the brony crowd to watch the show.
Sure, absolutely. Other publisher news, IDW Publishing has announced the April debut of the new Dungeons & Dragons miniseries, Dungeons & Dragons Cutter. It's a new 5-issue comic book series written by the veteran team of D&D scribes R.A. and Gino Salvatore. David Baldion will provide the interior art, with Steve Ellis creating the covers for the series. So if you're a big D&D fan, rejoice. And this is a really cool piece of news. Three very well-known book publishers have opened a retail website that will offer 1.2 million titles, according to a story by the Wall Street Journal. The site is called Bookish.com, and it's founded by Hatchet, Penguin, and Simon & Schuster. It's going to offer independent editorial comment about books, metadata on books provided by 16 other publishers in addition to the three founding companies, recommendations, and a store that sells both print and digital books. The site will also offer consumers links to buy from other online print and digital retailers such as Amazon and Barnes & Nobles. Bookish is offering some graphic novels, including Marvel, DC, and Viz manga, and role-playing game stuff such as Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinders at launch. Many books are being sold at discount at around 20% off retail. So that's really interesting here. I mean, not only are they, like, selling the books themselves, but they're also, like, pointing you to, like, Amazon and Barnes & Nobles. I guess they must get, like, a cut or something if you click on and go and purchase from Amazon or Barnes & Nobles by first going through their site. I would imagine, you know, and could you imagine if they were able to, like, offer bigger deals than Amazon on certain books?
Yeah, I would certainly go there if I was interested in the titles, you know. That's an interesting thing, because there are several people who are starting to self-publish and doing it, like, digitally, because bookstores are kind of fading out of existence.
Yes, they are. Barnes & Nobles is going to be cutting stores over the next few years.
And I'm going to miss that, because I loved going into a bookstore and browsing.
Sure.
I found some wonderful books by doing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to really miss that. You know, and online is just not the same experience.
It's not, but I guess people want books cheaper. And that's the thing, is that, you know, these stores are paying overhead. They have to lease the property. They have to have a staff. So, you know, they don't give you the kind of discounts that an Amazon will give you. And ultimately, people are, you know, buying, you know, based on their wallet, what they can save. And the shipping happens quick enough. I you know, when I order stuff, I do the super savers. And even then, I get the book within a week. So, it's kind of difficult. I am interested, though, in this kind of bookish thing, because besides, you know, offering digital and print books for sale, it seems to be providing, like, a lot of interesting content, though, you know, too. Recommendations, articles, that kind of stuff. It seems like it's its own kind of community kind of thing online. So I am looking forward to that. And as far as newsy news goes, that is it for me. Do you have any stories you want to say?
Well, I've got two real quickly. There's one story that I wanted to mention was that the Green Arrow is taking off. I'm hearing a lot of positive comments about Jeff Lemire's first issue.
Oh, cool.
The tone is very similar to the Arrow show on the CW, although he's adding his own little twists to it. There's a very big surprise at the very end of the book that Mr. Lemire is going to have to explain going forward. Just a great, I think, great job, and the art is very interesting. This is the artist that used to be on iVampire, as now, doing a wonderful job. It's just a great combination. The artist is doing these sort of duotone setups in between. You know, the pages are full color, but every once in a while there'll be a panel that'll be just like black and green with, you know, with white, of course. But they put those in, and it's very well done. It's a very dark and moody kind of a thing. You don't have to have read the previous issues of Green Arrow, and I know not many people picked it up. I did. It fits right in with the continuity real well. They explain what's happening with some of the stuff. But it's very much like the show, and I think that was a smart move. But as always, Mr. Lemire puts his unique spin on things. So I'm expecting this latest Green Arrow, I think it was number 17, to go into a second printing before long.
Oh.
It's very, very good. It's really, if you get a chance to get it, it's really good. I expect, though, that the stores are going to be selling out of it because there's a lot of buzz about it. So that's interesting. So anyway, that's one. Number two, is another piece of DC news, is that the DC has decided to go political. They're going to have conflicting titles and based on one on the 1%, one on the 99%. There's one title called The Green Team. The Green Team is a bunch of younger kids with a lot of money who want to finance inventors and explorers and adventurers, and they're going to try and catch up with these kinds of people, and they are going to back these things depending on who it is. So they're not necessarily going to be doing things themselves as much as they're going to be supporting people who want to do kinds of things.
Okay.
So it's kind of an interesting – it's written by Alt Baltazar and Franco, who have been involved in those like Superman titles, the Superman families and things like that. The art is by Ig Guara, and there's going to be cover by Amanda Connor. And it's going to come out in May. May 22nd is when that's going to come out. Now, coming out before that is the companion piece called The Movement Number 1, written, interestingly enough, by Gail Simone.
Oh, wow.
And with art by Freddie Williams II and cover by the same Amanda Connor.
Hmm.
So I find that interesting. And what this is all about, it's the description says, "We are faceless, we are limitless, we see all, and we do not forgive. Who defends the powerless against the greedy and the corrupt? Who protects the homeless and poverty-stricken from those who would prey upon them in the dark of night?" Apparently it's The Movement. So we're going to see about that. It's going to be a very different setup. It's going to be – these people are going to be much more hands-on doing things, trying to stop the rich and stuff like that. So eventually I see some sort of a crossover happening between these two books.
Oh, wow. So interesting there, creating a couple of movements. I guess both movements are trying to help society the best way they think possible. Mm-hmm. But obviously they have different viewpoints.
Yeah. Yeah, so I find that kind of interesting. I think that's an interesting twist. I knew Gail Simone had something else coming, and I was happy to hear that.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a really interesting kind of thing. I'm going to have to pick those books up because I just think those are good. Now, interestingly enough, The Green Team is based on creations by the same name by Joe Simon and another person. Now, of course, it's a very different look and feel to them, but these guys have kind of reworked them for today.
Mm-hmm.
But and Jerry Grandinetti was the other guy who did it. They did one whole solo adventure before they went faded into obscurity. And I just find this kind of an interesting thing. This is a good idea based on what's going on in society today. It's got me interested. I'm gonna see how it goes. So
yeah, I mean, it could be really brilliant. We'll have to see basically how mm-hmm. it works out. Mm-hmm. If it's willing to go certain directions, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I think that's kind of a fun thing. Like I said, a crossover just screams at me out of this. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you know.
So we'll see that. So, anyway, that's all the news that I have. Why don't we go ahead and move into the previews? What sure. books are you looking forward to?
Okay, so this is February 20th, 2013. A lot of good stuff coming out. Over on the Boom Studios side, we have Adventure Time number 13, very popular series with four covers coming out. Then we have like a new, I guess, relaunch of the Hellraiser series from Boom Studios. It's Clive Barker's Hellraiser Dark Watch number 1. Mm-hmm. Tim Bradstreet does a couple of covers, and then we have Nick Percival, who's brilliant, and Fraser Irving doing covers as well, too. Over on Dark Horse side, if you never checked out the Baltimore miniseries that they've done a couple of them, check out this one-shot, Baltimore, the Widow, and the Tank. It's kind of a period piece, kind of like a mixture of that Hellboy kind of art style. It's a fun series. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're a fan of The Goon, we have The Goon number 44 on sale, as well as The Goon volume 12. Them That Raised Us Lament, trade paperback. There we go. Over on DC, we have The Animal Man, Volume 4, Born to be Wild, trade paperback. Now, what this is that, you know, for a long time ago, DC released, like, the first three trades of the original 1990s Animal Man series written by Grant Morrison. But, you know, Animal Man continued on long after that. But we never got any trades or anything. So this is the first time in a long time we're getting the Peter Milligan storyline that started right after Grant Morrison. So that's going to be collected into a trade. I hope eventually we get to the part with Jamie Delano and Steve Pugh, which happened like a few years later. So, you know, fingers crossed that we don't have to wait like another 10 years for the Animal Man volume.
Yeah.
We also have Batwoman number 17 with a regular cover and then a black and white variant cover by J.H. Williams III. The very last issue of Hellblazer, number 300, goes on sale. It's $5, probably well worth picking up. End of an era there.
Yeah.
Issue 300. Now, remember last week we were talking about that Marvel variant cover with all the birds of the different states.
Yeah.
I was telling you that it was a spoof of a DC variant thing going on, but I couldn't remember which one it was. Well, it was a spoof of Justice League of America.
Okay.
Because Justice League of America, as you can see, Wayne, has a David Finch combo pack cover followed by, and I'm not going to name all of these, okay? There's the complete U.S. flag variant cover pack, and then every state, every state has a flag variant cover. Oh, and then we also get a black and white variant cover as well, too. Oh, sorry, I'm reading a different title. So, yeah, we have every state getting its own variant cover. So, you know, Marvel, in return, I guess the week before, kind of like pokes fun at this, with a cover with Deadpool, with like the, what was it, 52? It wasn't 50, but they had 52 state nationality birds, basically, on screen, all over Deadpool.
Yeah, maybe this will finally put to death this multiple cover thing.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious when we see February numbers, how well the Justice League of America does. This seems a little too much. I mean, does anybody really want to collect all of these? Am I dying to get the Puerto Rico flag variant cover?
No, I'm not. All I want is the regular one. Whatever one I get, I'm happy with.
I will say this. David Finch had a very good month as far as cover artwork goes. I mean, he got paid for over 52 different covers. And then he got a little bit more money because Justice League of America Vibe number one goes on sale. And David Finch is also the cover artist, and he does a regular cover and a black and white variant cover. So, wow. So David Finch, you had a very good month. Don't vote all in one place.
Yeah.
Interesting solicitation here. Devil's Due Entertainment, remember them? Well, I barely do. They've been gone for a while. But they're back, and they have Plume number 2 of issue number 5 going on sale. Dynamite Entertainment has Army of Darkness number 11, Bionic Woman number 8. There is a reorder variant cover of Mask number 2, and then we have Mask number 4 on sale, and it's got a whole bunch of covers, as you Dynamite books. Lee does a cover, Alex Ross does a cover or two. A lot of guys involved. Paul Renard does a cover. And then who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men. We have The Shadow, year one issue of number 8. And of course, this wouldn't be a number one issue if it didn't have a bunch of varied covers by Alex Ross, Howard Chaykin, and several other people.
Yeah.
And then subscription variant covers and a Wilfredo Torre hand drawn variant cover. So, surprising there. IDW has some good stuff going on. The Dungeons & Dragons Classic Volume 4. Mm-hmm. For those people who can't wait for that new Dungeons & Dragons miniseries to come out.
Mm-hmm.
G.I. Joe number 1. We have A and B covers and retailer issues and subscription covers.
Mm-hmm.
We have Judge Dredd number 4, which has Coward doing a cover, Nelson Daniel doing a cover, and then a retailer and cover by Nick Percival, who we mentioned earlier, over on another variant cover. Oh, the Hellraiser title.
Mm-hmm.
So he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll tell you a little story. I think how Nick Percival got screwed recently.
Oh.
At the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lock and Key Omega number 3 of 7.
Mm-hmm.
And, we talked about those ponies before.
Mm-hmm.
Those My Little Ponies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, IDW, we got the micro series, 1 of 6. Because they're making a lot of money off of the regular series.
Apparently.
So this is Twilight Sparkle, and it's got some variant covers as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some subscription and retailer incentive covers and some A and B covers there going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to let you talk about the Star Trek stuff, because you got some good Star Trek stuff to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'll be disappointed if you don't mention all three of these. But, then we have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 19.
Mm-hmm.
Over on Image, we have Happy, Grant Morrison's book, with two different covers, Derek Robertson and Frank Quitely.
Mm-hmm.
Legend of Luther Strode number 3 of 6 on sale. And then over on Marvel's side, we have Alpha Big Time number 1. Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Big Time. It's a miniseries, actually. It's number 1 of 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then the famous PBS series comes to the comic book pages with Nova.
Right. Yeah.
you would hope so.
Yeah.
Nova, the comic book series.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Joe Quesada gets in on it with a variant cover and a sketch cover. There's the blank cover, and Dennis does the regular cover. And we have our young variant cover, and Scotty, the artist, just seems to be just churning these out.
Mm-hmm.
Marcos Martin does a variant as well, too. So, yeah, that's it as far as what we have here for stuff on sale February 20th.
All right, let me throw a couple in there.
Sure.
We talked about Superior Spider-Man. Issue number 4 comes out that week.
Right.
We've also got Daredevil number 23, which is Mark Waid, which I always want to promote as much as I can. Thief of Thieves number 12, which seems to be slowing down.
Yeah, Image.
It's coming out from, you mentioned from IDW, the Star Treks. There are Star Trek number 18.
Uh-huh.
And there's Star Trek Countdown to Darkness number 2.
Yeah.
They're putting a second printing of number 1, so if you want to buy them both, you can. And then the Brandon Braga, Star Trek The Next Generation Hive, number 4 of 4. The conclusion is coming out. So that'll keep you. If that's not enough science fiction, Doctor Who, number 6 is coming out. And Jericho, season 4, number 2 of 5.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be coming out. Then we get the Dynamite, Dejathoris, and the Green Men of Mars, number 1 of 4. She's already got her own title. Now we got a miniseries going on, too.
Yeah.
Which is something. And then Warlord of Mars, number 23 from Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get up into... I'm going to hit Dark Horse before I hit DC.
Okay.
And Dark Horse is... the one I really like is Black Beetle No Way Out, number 2 of 4 from one of the creators of on the current Flash title, which I really like. I like that book a lot. And I should, from Boom Studios, also mention Freelancers, number 4. Which is pretty good. I like that book a lot. I interviewed the creator of that, and it's a good book. Two female main characters, so I always like book with women in the lead. Then we get to DC. Of course, I always have a lot. There's Batman Beyond Unlimited, number 13, the print version of the digital books. Birds of Prey, Catwoman, DC Universe Presents, new printing of Death of Superman, Green Lantern, number 17, and Green Lantern Core. And Green Lantern New Guardians, they've put all three of those out on the same week. I'm not sure that's a smart idea. I would space them out if it was me. But those all coming out the same week. And then as well, Justice League number 17. So we'll have Justice League and Justice League of America out on the same weeks as well, apparently. So that's a lot. Legion of Superheroes 17, Nightwing 17, Red Hood and the Outlaws, the aforementioned Supergirl. Sword of Sorcery number 5, and then Wonder Woman number 17, and the final issue, darn it, of Young Justice number 25. The show apparently is not coming back, and this is the last issue of the comic.
Wow.
And those are all the books that I'm interested in. Anything else we should talk about before we call it quits?
Yeah, I wanted to mention about Nick Percival. He's had a good week this week. He does a cover for Judge Dredd. He does a cover for Hellraiser. But I think overall, with the recent movie stuff that's coming out, Nick Percival has gotten screwed.
Oh.
The reason for that is this. Nick Percival did a book a couple of years ago, 2-3 years ago, called Legends.
Mm-hmm.
And this book, first of all, Nick Percival is just a brilliant artist. He's like a Steve Pugh in the fact that he had a certain style in the 90s, and you wouldn't recognize his artwork in the 90s if you saw it today, because he has totally advanced himself. He's gotten into using, computer and works, but it's not like Photoshop. It's not like he's just taking faces, you know, and drawing over them and stuff like that. He actually has, like, evolved into a great drawing and painting style. Mm. So he did this book, Legends. It's this graphic novel that came out, and it reinvents the fairy tale genre, so the grim fairy tale characters. It's big. It's action-y. You have Jack the Giant Killer, you have Hood, you know, Red Hood, and these people are killing trolls and monsters and stuff, and they're dealing with this evil witch storyline. It's big and actiony. You have Hansel and Gretel, and you know where I'm taking this,
mm-hmm.
basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he kind of reinvents these fairy tale characters and into action superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
So what comes out and was the number one movie?
Hansel and Gretel,
that's right. And it basically takes those characters, makes them big action superhero characters fighting witches, big guns, and just, you know, kick-ass stuff going on there. It basically just rips off the book.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's coming up in, like, a few weeks?
Jack the Giant Killer, isn't it?
Jack the Giant Killer. Which is another character in this Legends book. Mm. And again, another big action-y reinvent, turn these fairy tale characters on their heads and make them big action heroes kind of stories.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to mention that.
Okay.
That Nick Percival got screwed. Because he had this book come out. And this is not that it just came out, he just did this in like a few months' time. This was something he'd been developing since, like, 2007, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Artwork is fantastic. I'm sure some people probably read this book and thought, why don't some producers, maybe some directors probably pick this book up at a certain point in time? There was, like, a free preview book that was given out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure at some point somebody said, why don't I do this?
Hmm. Well, if they haven't paid him yet, they ought to. They really ought to give him some money for that, especially if it was, like, I think, the number one movie.
Yeah.
So I would say that they need to...
They're not original characters to begin with.
Of course not, but they're public domain by now.
You know, they're public domain, but this whole concept, I mean, give credit where credit is due. Why don't any of these people just step up and say... Yeah, I read Nick Percival's work, and I decided that, you know what, I was going to take that Hansel and Gretel character and make it a movie of my own.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to take Jack the Giant Killer, you know, and I'm going to just make this a movie of my own. Because I think that's what happened. These people won't admit to it, but I think if he was to take these people to court, I think he would have a good case.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say he should, you know. But, you know, you never know. My hope was that it's like Jim Starlin with Thanos. I mean, he went to court and all of a sudden it got real quiet. And so I have a feeling that he got his palm greased and that would be the way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they are going to, like, just going to buy you out and settle the case. Because, like, the ramifications that if you lost this case would be even worse, you know. But it's always a gamble anyway. I just don't think that they stole the concept. I think they even stole the art style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the style of, you know, the Legends book, you know, the kind of world he created, the creatures he created, the kind of muscly action way that, you know, these characters were drawn, and then you saw Hansel and Gretel, or if you saw like the promotional posters for Jack the Giant Killer, mm-hmm. then you would think, yeah, oh, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, well, I'm real sorry to hear that because I saw them and they looked familiar to me when I saw the commercials for them. I haven't seen the movie, but I was just kind of fascinated by the fact that everybody's trying to upgrade the fairy tales and stuff like that. And
sure.
If he'd already done it and they took his thing, basically, whole cloth, and yeah, he should be paid.
Totally. And I can just see now, like a few months from now, because Hollywood likes to copy and continue something that's really popular, I wouldn't be surprised if we just saw like Little Red Hood, you know, redoing Little Red Riding Hood and... I'm trying to think what else would there would be to rip off from Rapunzel, you know, that as well too. So we'll see.
Okay. On that note, then we'll call it quits for this week's news and previews. As always, good talking with you, John Luke. You always bring a lot of interesting news and insight. And we'll look forward to talking with you next time.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
And that's a wrap for this episode. I'm going to be taking a week off as I'm a guest at the Farpoint Sci-Fi Convention, just north of Baltimore, Maryland. If you're stopping by, be sure to say hi. I'll be involved with the podcasting stuff as well as other media panels. But I'll be back in 2 weeks, and I hope to have in upcoming weeks interviews with Michael Alan Nelson and Adam Beecham, to name a few. But until next time, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.